Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly.
What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to joking and talking with your host, Russ Belville.
I'm so mad and I am so frustrated right now, folks. Excuse me, I'm sorry. If you caught our last story, Michael Brooks is a 50-year-old man. I'm 49. 50-year-old man who's going to die. The guy's going to die, not having seen his children for the last 3 months. Having them taken away because he found a miracle. Because he found a way to live. He found a way to survive. And I can't even, you know, I don't have kids. And I can't even imagine anything as cruel as this. And for him to be in as good a spirits as he was talking to me. And I just feel so powerless and so unable to change this. And, you know, I ask a lot sometimes for my listeners. You know, I'm always asking for money to keep this going and to spread the word. And I appreciate it. I would just ask one thing today, if you could. Just take some time and email Michael and let him know that there's people out here who are fighting for him, who care, who can't believe this is America. His email address is michaelbrooks1013@gmail.com. michaelbrooks1013@gmail.com. And just let him know that we care and we're fighting for him and we're going to do everything we can, whatever that is, to end this. Call the Tennessee Department of Children's Services. Call the governor of Tennessee. Bill Haslam, I think, is the governor. I just can't believe this is allowed to happen. The part that killed me, that really broke me, and it was so hard to conduct that interview, folks. I'm so glad I had a mute button. The part that broke me was when he talked about how they had to cut off. For the past 3 months, they haven't had visitations because every time they go to their visitation every 2 weeks, when their parents leave, the kids are distraught acting out. I can't remember the term he used. It was a Tennessee term I've never heard, but of course they're freaked out. Of course they're acting out. Of course it's awful for them. What's happening now to those kids is so much worse than anything. That even if you thought the guy was a drug dealer, which he's not, even if you thought he was an addict of some sort, which he isn't, even if you thought those things, how could you think that they're better off being separated from their parents like this during their most formative years? I'm struggling to think of what to say that isn't just screaming, ranting profanity at this point. But we keep on keeping on, and we keep on fighting. And I wake up every day to read and write and research and try to come up with some sort of convincing argument that will finally end this. March and write letters and donate to organizations and speak out and try to spread the word. This is only going to be defeated by all of us working together. I'm just a guy in Portland on the mic on YouTube. If I had won the lottery, if I win the lottery, I'd be throwing money at this. I'd be, if I was some sort of celebrity superstar, I'd be flying to Tennessee right now to hold press conferences. I just hope that somehow this gets picked up. I'm going to write about it for High Times tomorrow. I'll put it in my High Times article. I'll distribute it every way I can, but this is something that must not be allowed to continue. Those kids need a dad and a mom, and that man and his wife deserve to live. I've been a relatively healthy guy all my life. And when he said that part about, you know, I finally felt how other people feel, I what they take for granted with their health, and that kind of broke me too. I do take for granted my health and how well I feel, and I can't imagine what it must be like to have to live with seizures and hepatitis C and these conditions. And to be beginning a family in your late 40s and to experience that miracle only to have it like taken away from you, not only take away the miracle of your health, but also take your kids as well. That's just positively satanic, isn't it? All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a plan to legalize marijuana in New York State. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
Did you know that in Georgia, one in 13 adults is in jail or prison or on parole or probation? As a mother and as a professional, I advocate for access to drug treatment instead of incarceration. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Come lend your voice to the fight. Register now at reformconference.org.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Celebrity Marijuana Zone with Steve Bloom from celebstoner.com. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Shanna, your Hector David, PKA Dirtball.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 9 after the hour. And in this segment, I want to talk a little bit about a interesting, quirky sort of plan to legalize marijuana in the state of New York. Okay, so as you know, or maybe you don't, but only about half the states, 24 states in America, have the power of citizen initiative. So this is how we've legalized in 8 states so far, passed citizen initiatives. And that's how we got medical marijuana in the first states, was citizen initiatives. And when you're going through the citizenry, it's a lot easier to get this stuff passed because the majority supports it, right? But when you have to go through a legislature, a little more difficult because you have to make deals and you have to appease certain powerful blocks like, say, cops or rehabs or whoever else, the religious right. So there's been this lack of reform, or very half-stepping reform, you might say,
in the Northeast and in the East in general, because most of the eastern states don't have the initiative process, aside from like I believe Maine and Florida. I think there's a couple others maybe in there, but notice Maine and Florida, of course, being states that have recently passed marijuana reforms. So for the states that don't have the initiative process, the only thing left is to go through the legislature. Again, that's fraught with compromise. You end up with this watered down, milquetoast, not so hot legalization or medical marijuana so far. Well, that might not be the case in New York State. And it's an interesting story that Mona Zhang has reported on. And it has to do with this idea of using a constitutional convention to legalize marijuana in New York. And the name of the group, RRNY, stands for Restrict and Regulate New York. Now that, first of all, is an interesting name, Restrict and Regulate. Restrict? Prohibition is pretty dang restrictive. But the campaign, Restrict and Regulate New York, is being so far manned by Jerome DeWald, who's a 66-year-old investor. Now, this is where I got to give you the full disclosure on this. I know Jerome DeWald. Jerome DeWald, I've seen at numerous events when I'm at expos and such, and we've chatted a few times. We've had a couple of lunches. Last time I was in Manhattan, I had lunch with him. And he's called me a couple of times as he was beginning this Restrict and Regulate New York campaign to ask my advice on certain things and also to ask me if I wanted to be a major spokesperson for this constitutional idea. I declined. I love Portland. You're going to have to write me a real fat check to get me out of Portland, Oregon at this point. I got my recreational plants in the backyard. I got my chickens. Life is good, folks. So I declined, but I did consult with him on the gig, and I do, support the guy. I think he's, he's been an investor almost about $1 million he's invested in the marijuana biz. So I'm cool with the guy. He's a quirky little guy. He's kind of he's got a bow tie and a nebbish kind of a vibe to him. But he's really nice, really great guy. Anyway, he's featured in the story because he's the guy behind Restrict and Regulate New York. And what this is a little quirk, a little known codicil in the New York State Constitution that requires a referendum on whether to hold a constitutional convention to rewrite it. And this comes up every 20 years. And New York's not the only one. New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Connecticut, according to Mona's piece, have this as well. The last constitutional convention was called by the state legislature in New York in 1967. And the New Yorkers rejected proposals in that constitutional convention. One of them was tax money to fund religious schools. The voters can also call for the constitutional convention. So this call, a referendum on whether or not there's going to be a constitutional convention, the legislature can put it up or the voters can put it up, which is through an initiative process, right? So the last time voters did that in New York was 1938. They approved amendments enabling the state to set up a social welfare system and requiring public construction projects to pay a union-level prevailing wage. So there is precedent. This has happened. The legislature called one in 67. The people did this back in 38. There was a call for one of these conventions in 1997, and that was rejected as well. So this November, New Yorkers get to vote on whether or not there should be a constitutional convention. So if this now, of course, we're talking 2017 election, right? Off year election. So already we're a little behind the eight ball when it comes to getting the kind of turnout we like as far as getting a more marijuana friendly base, libertarians, heavy liberals, progressives and such, younger people especially. Your 2017 races are like your mayor's races and city council that like, 10% of the electorate votes in, and it's usually much older voters, right? Not doesn't bode well when you're talking about a marijuana referendum. But this wouldn't be a marijuana referendum. This would be should we have a constitutional convention? So if this year they vote that there should be a convention, the convention would happen in April of 2019. Then those delegates at the convention would be elected next year to go to the convention in April 2019, and voters would then ratify or defeat any amendments that get proposed that would be on the ballot in November 2019. So this is still a two and a half year process we're talking about here. Are we going to have a convention 2017? 2018 we'll be electing the delegates. Early 2019 we'll be proposing the amendments. And then November 2019, you'd actually vote on them. So here's where it gets interesting. The idea would be to get marijuana legalization in as one of these amendments. But there's no guarantee that it would, and no guarantee that a whole bunch of other stuff wouldn't also be tossed into the mix. Now, this is where the politics gets kind of interesting. Because you could try to, you know, campaign this for November 2017, you know, should we have a constitutional convention? And you could try to put forth the idea, New York State needs to legalize marijuana. The legislature's never going to move fast enough to do it. Therefore, let's have a constitutional convention and elect the delegates who will put forth a marijuana constitutional amendment. Now, that's great if that would generate enough tension and get enough people interested in having the New York Constitutional Convention. But who else is going to surf in on the coattails of that to push for a constitutional convention as well? Everybody with a particular agenda, legislative agenda, is going to want to jump in the fray, right? You'll have the anti-gun, or I should say gun control people, jumping in, wanting to pass something constitutionally for themselves. And you'll have the pro-gun people wanting to jump in. You'll have the anti-abortion people and the pro-choice people jumping in. You'll have, you know, everybody could get into the mix once you open up the doors to a constitutional convention. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Personally, I think, you know, Jefferson was right when he talked about, you know, every generation or so, you should rewrite these things. Shit changes, right? The ideas that were valid and, you know, had purpose in 1789 may not fit for the modern world. We might need to revamp things. So I'm not against the idea of the Constitutional Convention. What I worry about is how the politics would play out as far as who'd be pouring money in for the, yes, let's have a Constitutional Convention side versus who's going to try to keep that from happening. And how do you build the alliances between the groups? You know, you might have to have pro-marijuana people and pro-gun people having to align to be in this, to get this constitutional vote to happen. And then that might turn off the gun control people from wanting to support the marijuana thing because they joined with the gun. You know, I mean, how all of the pieces would fit together in this. And that's part of, you know, the main reason I declined was because I love Portland and I'm not leaving. But as I worked this through in my head, I thought, how am I going to argue this? How am I going to? That's like, I can see so many minefields coming up trying to pull this off. That said, I'm for it. Go for it, man. Let's get a constitutional convention and let's just roll the dice and see where it falls. Because if we do end up with a whole bunch of amendments proposed in New York State, any of them that are pro-marijuana are likely to pass. You know, pro-medical, even if they came up with a better medical program, because, you know, New York's one of those no-smoking kind of cannabinoid preparation states. So even if it was just a real you-can-grow-cannabis in your home and smoke it for medical purposes law, that would be fine as an amendment. But I really think New York could go farther and get themselves a, you know, full-scale legalization with home grow going through the amendment process. So it's interesting. And then the other aspect of the case that's, or the campaign that's problematic to some people, is DeWald does have a conviction having to do with a PAC that he had set up during some sort of one of the elections back in 2005. A couple of political action. Oh, he was convicted in 2005 of fraud and larceny charges in Michigan for two PACs he'd run in the 2000 presidential election. for Al Gore and for George Bush. He was raising money for both sides. It's a very interesting story. That's for sure.
You're really clouding the energy in this room right now.
Oh, you know what? Blind and Baked 420 in the chat room nails it. In the Constitutional Convention, they should have an amendment for citizen initiatives. That way, if they don't get it through in 2019, you'll have the power to do an initiative for 2020 when it would be a presidential election year, and you'd be sure to pass. Oh, I've got the smartest chat room. Hey, it's 420. We'll be right back after this.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
As a formerly incarcerated person, I know firsthand all the ways that we are disenfranchised when we are run through the system. Every day I work to help people regain their rights and dignity, but the fight is far from over. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Join us in the fight to end the drug war. Register now at reformconference.org.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Freedom Leaf Preview with Steve Bloom from Freedom Leaf Magazine. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Barack has sent him a package? Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. We got some news from the great state of Hawaii. Didn't include this in the cannabis headline news, but it's an interesting bit of news, and that is Governor Ige in Hawaii has signed the latest bill that eliminates medical marijuana in Hawaii. That's right. You can no longer get medical marijuana in Hawaii. From now on, you can only get medical cannabis. Sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. Yeah, he signed this bill that makes it so that all throughout Hawaii law, all references to marijuana are now references to cannabis. So you can no longer get medical marijuana in Hawaii. You can only get medical cannabis. And people that follow me and know my whole thing about the word marijuana might wonder what I think about such a thing, right? Well, I think it's great. I support laws like this, and I'll tell you why. It is cannabis. When we're talking about medical cannabis, we are talking about all these different preparations that can be used from the cannabis plant. One of them can be the smoking of marijuana, the dried flowering tops of cannabis plants, usually seedless, prepared for smoking. Another one of them can be the vaporization of marijuana, the dried flowering tops of cannabis plants, prepared specifically for smoking. But there's many other ways. There's the cannabis brownie, there's the cannabis lozenge, there's the cannabis spray, there's the cannabis oil, right? There's a lot of preparations of cannabis. So cannabis is the broader term, okay? This is where I get into this little linguistic thing with people, right, that want to eliminate the word marijuana. Marijuana is racist. It's racist, my God. Well, I don't understand how a word could be racist against a plant. Plants don't have a race, but they say it's racist. Now, let me put that argument to the side. We'll talk about that in a second. But I want to go back to the argument about the specificity of the word marijuana. This is why I don't like this drive to eliminate the word marijuana completely. Now, as far as, like I said, as far as the bill for the law, and we're talking about a scientific thing and medicine and all of its preparations, then yes, cannabis is the word we should be using there. Absolutely. What I'm talking about is don't say that the word marijuana is unusable, because it has a specificity to it that cannabis does not. Cannabis is a broader term. Cannabis encompasses stalks and seeds and root balls and leaves and flowers and everything in between. Cannabis incorporates both marijuana, cannabis that is cultivated for psychoactive purposes, and hemp. Cannabis is also hemp, right? So we have the word hemp so that we can distinguish a type of cannabis. So why not also have the word marijuana so we can distinguish a type of cannabis? I see nothing wrong with that. Now, back to the racist thing. Oh, marijuana's racist. No, marijuana's just a word. Okay? Marijuana's a word. It, in and of itself, cannot be inherently racist. There are only two ways this could be racist. It's either inherently racist or it's implicitly racist, okay? Now, can it be inherently racist? Impossible. Because, again, plants don't have a race. The word marijuana is not a slur upon the race of a plant. Neither can the word marijuana be a slur against the race of a person using it, since people of all races smoke marijuana. So, can it be implicitly racist? You know, like, for example, the word uppity, okay? The word uppity is implicitly racist, and the word boy is implicitly racist, right? The context in which you use those two words defines whether or not it's racist, right? If you said, well, that horse out there bucking around, it's all getting uppity on me, then you're cool. Horses can be uppity, right? If you say, oh, that boy out there playing in the field, he's playing with that uppity horse, you're fine. You use those two terms and you talk about a grown black man, you're gonna get a little lesson in inherent versus implicit racism. Okay, so does marijuana fit in that? Is marijuana implicitly racist by context? Now, that's their argument. Their argument is that it's implicitly racist by context because of the context of going back to 1930s, 1920s, when William Randolph Hearst and Harry J. Anslinger are conducting a propaganda campaign by using the Mexican slang term marijuana, which again may not even be Mexican. It might be Chinese, mahuan. There's other explanations. It's entomology, or is it etymology? One's bugs, one's words. Anyway, its origins. Its origins are cloudy. Smoky, shall we say? Hazy. Anyway. But the context is supposed to be that Harry J. Anslinger and William Randolph Hearst, in order to demonize and you demonize Mexicans, demonize the Hispanic laborers who are coming to take your jobs, in order to demonize them for racist purposes, they took the word marijuana and started using it. Marijuana, assassin of youth. Marijuana, reefer madness, evil marijuana. Right. And because the populace who knew what the word cannabis was, everybody knew what cannabis was. Cannabis was in half the medicines of the day. Well, I don't know if it's half, but a lot of the medicines of the day. And they knew what hemp was. We've been growing hemp here for 400 years on this continent. So, yeah, I knew what hemp was. So they knew they couldn't come around and say, hey, we're going to ban this cannabis thing because all the Mexicans are smoking it. Well, that wouldn't, you can't take my cannabis from me. Who cares, right? But if it's, oh, these Mexicans are bringing in this marijuana. Oh, my goodness. They're bringing in this marijuana. Well, now you can demonize them, right? So, based on that context, is the word marijuana implicitly racist? I argue no. Because the people using the word marijuana today can't possibly confuse anybody with it. The whole purpose of marijuana in the 30s was nobody knew what the word marijuana was, so it was a scary foreign Mexican thing. But now everybody knows what the word marijuana is. In fact, more people in America know what the word marijuana is than know what the word cannabis is. So it's ubiquitous in our usage, and its context, therefore, has changed. When you say marijuana anymore, it can't conjure Mexicans or Hispanics. It can't conjure hatred or discrimination against someone any more than cannabis would, because once someone hears cannabis and says, what's that? And you say, well, you know, it's the proper term for marijuana. Well, you're already back in the marijuana bucket. So what difference does it make? Now, I argue that marijuana today is a more precise term for that which we smoke, that there's nothing inherently racist about it, and there's nothing implicitly racist about it anymore. And you also have to question, just because a racist chose to use a slang term to scare other people on a race basis, does that make the term in and of itself a term that now is implicitly racist? So if that's so, if that's the case, and instead of it being Mexicans coming across the border, they were, give me the Tinker James. If that wasn't the case, and instead it was Jamaicans, it was Rastafarians. Rastafarians coming on the shore in droves, coming to Tinker James with their ganja, with their, ooh, their ganja, that ganja. What if William Randolph Hearst had plastered ganja madness, ganja assassin of youth throughout the literature? Would we now be in a, you'd have to argue, if you're on their side, you'd have to argue that ganja would be a racist term. It's racist. Ganja is a racist term. What if it was, now obviously this would be impractical, but what if it was South Africans that were coming up on the shores of America with their DACA? They're bringing their DACA. Would that be then a racist term? So it's just weird to me that if we're going to say marijuana is a racist term, in a sense, aren't we kind of being racist against Mexicans for having that slang term? I mean, it's always a weird topic. There's so many people that feel pretty passionately about this. And my general rule of thumb are these. If we're talking about the plant, you've planted some seeds and you're cultivating a plant, it's a cannabis plant. There is no such thing as a marijuana plant. There are cannabis plants. Cannabis plants produce some marijuana. Some of the cannabis plants do. It's not like you can call an apple tree because it produces apples. Because in the case of cannabis plants, some of them produce flowers that are for psychoactive purposes. Some of them produce seed for oil purposes. Some of them produce stock for building purposes. Some of them produce CBD heavy buds and so forth. So this would be like, you know, a tree that could produce a whole bunch of different fruits. You'd have to call it something else. You couldn't name it after its fruit. So there aren't marijuana plants. There are cannabis plants. But there are marijuana laws, except now in Hawaii. There are marijuana laws. That's why, you know, people say, normally, it's a national area. It should be cannabis. You should say cannabis. Well, they're not going to be NORCL. That's a shitty acronym, NORCL. And actually, there was a NORCL in the late 70s proposed National Organization for the Reform of Cocaine Laws. I've seen the T-shirt. But NORCL's not going to work. NORCL rhymes with snorkel. That's not going to work. And besides, what they are trying to do is reform marijuana laws. In the books, in most of these states now, other than Hawaii, the laws say marijuana. So there's nothing wrong with saying that. The Marijuana Policy Project. Should they be the Cannabis Policy Project? Well, no, because they're fighting for marijuana legalization. That is, the legalization of the dried flowering tops of cannabis plants prepared for smoking. In fact, you could argue with their support of laws that prevent everybody from home growing, you could say that that's even more accurate, because home growing would be cannabis policy. Marijuana policy keeps you in the realm of, I have to go to some store somewhere and buy it. And it is distributed by growers who grow cannabis, and then the marijuana is produced from it. So, but still, the policies on the books are marijuana policies, because the word marijuana is in the law. Even if the word marijuana isn't completely in the law, marijuana policy and marijuana laws may still make sense if we are talking about the specific, again, sensimilia, the dried flowering tops prepared for smoking, for entertainment or medical purposes. So I guess the long story short is, yay, Hawaii. Good on you for changing marijuana to cannabis. I support that. I don't support eliminating marijuana from our vocabularies. All right, stay tuned. When we come back, we'll have more from the wide world of weed right here on the Marijuana Agenda.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to mjagenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. If you're an organization or business looking to promote your brand, we have sponsorship patronage available at mjagenda.com. Sponsorship includes 15 and 30 second ad breaks and 6-minute interviews on the podcast, depending on sponsorship level, which begins at $19.99 a month. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at mjagenda.com.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
The Marijuana Agenda. Kevin Sabet's Boogeyman since 2012.
You have offended my family, and you have offended Shaolin Temple.
Yes, might have gotten away with it too, if it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. Arr. What are you smoking there, boy?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
So have you ever heard that that saying about politics is like making sausage, right? You don't want to see what's going on in the sausage factory. You don't really want to know. This is one of those stories. The Reno Gazette Journal doing a good job on explaining the situation about the Nevada's marijuana shortfall. Of course, the state legalized marijuana in 2016, and on July 1st, their recreational sales went into effect through a program that allowed the existing medical dispensaries, a few of them, like 49, 48, something there, less than 50, allowed them to get a license that said you can sell from your existing stock of medical marijuana, you can sell to the recreational consumers. And now we're a week and a half, a little more than a week and a half into it, and they're running out of weed. Now, first of all, what a tragedy for the patients in Nevada, right? Because they can't just, oh, well, ran out of weed, right? A lot of these people are depending on it to live, you know, vibrant and healthy lives, if not just to live. So they can't get any marijuana if the supplies are running out. Now, the stores can restock with medical supply, that which has been grown or supplied after July 1st. So it's not a complete, you know, tragedy for patients other than, you know, having to wait in long lines and such. But they can't restock any more marijuana from the medical side to sell to the recreational customers. So that's why they're running out of marijuana. It's not like there's not marijuana in Nevada, but it's on the medical side. And they can't put any more from the medical side into the rec side. As you know, medical marijuana and recreational marijuana are two completely different types of things. Anyway, can you imagine if we had medical orange juice and recreational orange juice? Right? Well, you know, orange juice has vitamin C in it. Vitamin C is medically beneficial. But if you have a special card from the state, we'll sell you your orange juice with 50 cents off. Right? Because it's medical orange juice now. Anyway, I digress. So the situation that happens in Nevada is that they got legal sellers and they got people growing, but they don't have anybody to get the weed from the grower to the seller. Now, you may be thinking, I got a pickup truck. I'll do it. No, they can't just load it up into a truck and take it from place to place. You got to have a license for that. You got to have laws and regulations around that. But we got laws and regulations for the guy growing it. Yep. Mm-hmm. And but do we got a whole bunch of laws and regulations for the guy selling it? Yep, absolutely. So you're just saying in transit, that's the problem. We just don't have regulations. Yep, that's it. We don't have regulations about that. All right. So here's how this story gets into sausage making land. What happened with the question two, the initiative to legalize marijuana in Nevada, is that at the beginning of it, when this is like all the way starting it back in 2013, you're starting to figure out, all right, how are we going to legalize marijuana in Nevada? And keep in mind that marijuana legalization had been attempted twice before in Nevada by a lot of the same stakeholders, MPP and such. So, you know, this is a third time up. They want to make sure they do this right. So while they're starting up, getting the marijuana legalization language put together, you want to put together a coalition of supporters. You want to find out where you can get political allies. Now, Nevada is a kind of quirky state when it comes to your political allies because alcohol has an outsized sort of political clout there. You know, think about, you know, what is Nevada? It's Las Vegas, some of Reno, and a whole bunch of desert, a whole bunch of deserty mountain scrub, right? So alcohol is a big thing for all the casinos and all the drinking that goes on. Shit, you can walk around Las Vegas Boulevard with an open drink. Nobody cares, right? Alcohol is a huge political player. And then, of course, gaming and, hell, even mining, you know, mining in those mountainy, deserty areas out there. So according to the story in the Reno Gazette Journal, he spoke with Heather Azzi. I think that's her name, Azzi. Heather Azzi, who's the lead author. And so that's what she said. We were looking to build a viable coalition. The alcohol distributors were a part of that. Okay, so alcohol wants to be a part of what's going on. So according to Joe Bresny, who was the former campaign chair, he says that about a third of the alcohol distributors hated the idea. About another third were neutral on the idea. And the other third were for it. They're like, yeah, I'm in, right? So what they did is they figured that, okay, you guys are alcohol distributors. You already know logistics and trucking and deal with unions and all the stuff you'd have to do as far as getting product from point A to point B. And having it not be marijuana people in does give the appearance, at least to the people in the state that might be a little questioning of marijuana, that, hey, we've got an independent body involved here. These aren't marijuana people. These are alcohol people. They don't have a dog in this fight. So I can see that idea. And so what they did is they figured that, okay, we'll get these distributors on board, right? These distributors will support us. They'll kick in, you know, 100 grand here, quarter million there. And in return, we'll write into the law that they get first dibs on distribution licenses, exclusive rights for the first 18 months. And that would work, right? So initially, they got seven supporters on board, six of them from the alcohol industry. And they each donated on May 14th of 2014, $12,500 each. Not $100,000, not a quarter million, $12,500. But you figure, oh yeah, it'll build after that, right? So they continued on. And after that initial $12,500 investment in 2014, no more investment showed up. $12,500 is all they got from six different alcohol folks and one gaming trust. So what does he 12.5 times 6 is 85,000 $87,500 when they were expecting 100,000 to a quarter million from each one of these guys, right? So why did they close their wallets? Why are they initially into it and then well, because they started doing some thinking. Hold on, wait a minute. Marijuana is a Schedule I drug. Federal government doesn't like marijuana. So if we get in the marijuana business, they could take us to federal court, and then they could seize assets and such, and that doesn't sound fun. So that's what happens, and then once marijuana legalization rolls around, you don't have enough of these guys to distribute. And so the writers, AZ, Heather AZ and the folks at MPP, figured that out and thought, all right, we'll put a little thing in here, right? We'll give you your 18 months exclusive distribution rights, but if there's not enough of you, y'all chicken out, we've got an out. We'll write it so that the taxation, Department of Taxation, could open the application process to other applicants. All right, you get your 18 months, you get your exclusive, but if you can't handle the gig, then we're going to have to let other people apply. So in March of this year, the Nevada Department of Taxation said, yeah, we don't have enough alcohol distributors that are interested. And of the few that are interested, they're not eligible. They're not meeting the requirements. They're not following. They're not up to the regulatory requirements. So Department of Taxation says, yeah, we're going to open this up. And screw you guys and alcohol and your 18-month exclusivity, because we got to have somebody to get the weed from place to place. But a band of distributors, and get this, not the same ones that kicked in the 12.5 each, right? But a whole different group of distributors band together under the Independent Alcohol Distributors of Nevada. And they challenged the Department of Taxation. They sued them in court. They sued them saying, hold on, you can't take away alcohol industry's exclusive right to distribute cannabis just because you think there's not enough people available to handle how much demand there'll be. Why, you'll need to have some sort of proof of that. It's only March. We're not selling weed yet. You can't prove that the few guys that have registered so far aren't enough to handle the gig. Wouldn't they have to actually fail at the gig first before you could take away our exclusive right that the people voted on? And a district judge in Carson City hasn't decided on this. The case is still going, right? But he did rule that, hey, until we settle this, you can't go licensing. We're going to put a halt on licensing anybody else. Until this is settled, because if we let you license other people and then later we found out they should have had the exclusive right, we can't kind of take that back. So until we can prove that there's not enough alcohol distributors to handle the gig, we have to allow them to continue having their exclusive right, which they're not meeting. And that's where we are today. That's why we've got pot shops in Nevada on the strip, not on the strip, but pot shops in Vegas and Reno running out of weed and no way to restock it because there's not enough people to restock it because none of the alcohol people want to do it. But until we prove that, they still have the exclusive right to not do it. And there's your sausage, ladies and gentlemen. There's your sausage. Yummy. So the Nevada Tax Commission is going to be voting today on new regulation. That would also have to be reviewed in court, of course. And according to this new emergency regulation, alcohol distributors would still be allowed to apply for the distribution licenses, but other people would also be able to apply. But if the court doesn't see it that way, then we're back to where we started and nobody's there to distribute marijuana. What a pickle. What a little pickle. Trying to coax out $250,000 here and there from the alcohol industry to support marijuana legalization, but didn't see ahead enough to think, wait a minute, are they really going to want to be big players in marijuana with their international holdings and all? These are the kind of lessons we have to learn, you know, as we go through trying to legalize marijuana. Even though it's been done in now 8 states, every state is a different playground. Every state's a different battlefield. The concerns of gaming, for example, don't exist when you're trying to legalize in other states. Or the concern of big alcohol isn't as controlling, isn't as politically powerful in some other states. Interesting stuff to read. I'll post that link in the chat room if you want to read up a little more on it. Stay tuned. When we come back, we'll wrap things up for this Thursday, give you a look at what's coming up on tomorrow's show. Great show coming up tomorrow as well. Stick around, tokers.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey, everybody, it's Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
This November, whether you see the words medical marijuana on your ballot or not, the issue is there. From the halls of Congress to your state capitol or city hall, politicians are already making decisions on medical marijuana policy on your behalf. This election, make sure they are representing you. Every vote is a vote for medical marijuana.
Visit votemedicalmarijuana.org today.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the gay agenda, only with better music.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the UK Cannabis Chronicle from the UK Cannabis Social Clubs. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Pot 2.0. It's not your father's Woodstock weed. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Oh, I just saw a line in the chat room I got to get to. Kevin says, I wouldn't have voted for Oregon recreational cannabis if I knew the OLCC was going to screw Oregon so bad. You know, I've heard complaints like this before. Washington State, of course, is the big one. Of, oh my God, we passed recreational marijuana and then they screwed medical. They ruined medical. Okay. And here's what I got to say about that. You can't be against marijuana legalization. Marijuana legalization means ending the criminal prosecution of people for using cannabis. And if you're using it for medical purposes, you can't support the continued punishment of people like you that are using cannabis. You can't get on a high horse and say, well, I need it for medical purposes. You're just getting high. Because if you do, you are arguing from the same position as Anslinger and Sabet. You are arguing that there is a moral problem with marijuana smoking. You're arguing that because you have a legitimate excuse, your morality is okay, but everybody else is just dopers getting high. So don't come at me with that. Now, to the actual practical effects. I mean, what he's referring to, there have been legitimate cutbacks in the program. I mean, people used to be able to card stack where you could take and put, you know, 6, 10, 12 patients at one house, one location. And a grower could grow 6 plants for each one of those patients. And you have 60 plants in the backyard, right? And that's now you're cut down. Now they're saying you can only have up to 12. And if you were a previous grower, you could have up to 24. If you're living in the country, 48 or 90 or 72 or whatever it is, 96. And I know for a lot of people in the country listening to me right now, they're like, oh, really? You guys are bitching about only being able to have a dozen plants? Wow. Must be tough. But it is for some people. Some people need extreme amounts of cannabis to get their fully infused cannabis oil and all that. So there's this thing of like, oh, they screwed medical. But here's, legalization is not screwing medical. Prohibition is screwing medical. Ask yourself this. Why do they cut back on what medical can have after a state legalizes? Why? Because they impose these incredibly small limits and incredibly high barriers to access to industry on the recreational side. And therefore, if you have these high taxes and heavy regulations and big fees to get into the recreational side, and then over here you have a medical side where it's tax-free and everybody gets a whole scad of weed, as much weed as they could want, and there's not a whole lot of regulation, you set up an incentive for people who want to be the rich guys on the rec side to go over on the medical side and screw around in there to be able to, you see what I mean? You undermine medical. You actually end up undermining medical in that respect. So why do they set the recreational limits so low and set the taxes so high? Well, because other states over there in Idaho and Kansas and Nebraska still have prohibition. And if we don't set limits low on those guys, I mean, ask yourself, why, when we legalized marijuana in Oregon, since we had, since 1998, patients being able to have 6 mature plants and 18 seedlings, be able to possess 24 ounces of marijuana, why didn't we just legalize that for everyone? Why not 24 ounces for everyone? Why not keep what medical was, right, at the level it was serving everyone, and just make that medical for all? Why didn't we just legalize it's medical marijuana, but you no longer have to have a condition? You just have to go get your card and everybody can do what we're all doing. Why didn't we do that? Because scientifically speaking, there's no reason why we shouldn't. Medically speaking, there's no reason why we shouldn't. But politically, there's a reason why we shouldn't. And that is because Idaho still has prohibition. And if we turned over what was Oregon medical at its level to everybody in Oregon, there's this massive cascading flood of weed heading east. Now, I think that's a good thing. You and I love that idea. That's a wonderful idea. Unfortunately, voters don't, and cops don't, and the federal government doesn't, and all that. And so we're stuck with having to legalize with these little tiny baby steps. Well, if medical's way up here and rec's way down there, the bigger the difference is between those two, the greater the incentive of cheating the medical program. And the more cheating that happens, the more you invite federal scrutiny to shut down your program, both medical and recreational. So don't look at this as OLCC screwing this, or the legislature did that, or legalization ruins medical or anything like that. Look at it as part of the process that eventually gets us to where it should be, which is marijuana is as legal as zucchini and everybody can have it. And you can have as much as you want it, and you can buy as much as you want. It's like anything else that we buy and sell. But until we get there, yeah, there's going to be these problems. There's going to be these inconsistencies. There's going to be these problems. But don't buy into dividing us into rec and medical. And don't buy into this idea that, well, from now on, we better never vote for recreational because it's just going to ruin medical. No, what's ruining medical is the fact that prohibition continues. And until we legalize, we don't take a step forward in ending that prohibition. Now, I wish OLCC had done a lot of things different. I really wish that there were much more consideration for what patients need and the way the program should be. But keep the blame where it belongs, and that is on legislators that need to be better educated or voted out. And keep the blame on the prohibition that keeps it illegal, that forces us into these crazy restrictions on anybody's use of cannabis. Don't let them divide us. Don't let them pit rec versus medical. I lived through I-502. It sucks. But I'll tell you what, even now, as a whole, Washington State is better off now with legalization than they were without it. That's all the time we got. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You think I'm sweet, you're planet, you're growing, you're giant, you're